you need to understand your relationship with money. And if you don't understand your relationship with money, if you are a person who is afraid and who has to save money for that rainy day, well, when you're 62 years old and you've got $2 million in the bank, you ain't going to enjoy that money because you've been living in scarcity. Understand the relationship that you have with money. That's the very first thing that you need to do.
So guys, I'm super excited to welcome to the stage, Gino Barbaro. Welcome to the show, my friend. How are you doing?
Mr. Trevor, I'm doing good. You missed one big important stat in my life. I've got six kids. That's the most important thing. Out of all the money, out of all the cash flow, that is the most important thing in my life. So I just want to drop the nugget there.
No, that's not a drop the nugget. That's a drop the mic. Okay. You got six kiddos. Wow. Yes, okay. Okay. I just have to start there. What made you decide, you know, at five to go to six?
You don't want to know why? It's like buying buildings and buying apartments. The first one, you don't know what you're doing. It's like, okay, I got into this real estate thing. How do I do this? The second one is like, I did it once. You know what? I can figure this out. The third one is like, okay, this is getting to be fun. There's a process here. The fourth one is like, okay, this is getting to be really good. I'm getting good at this. The fifth one is like, piece of cake. And the sixth one is like icing on the top. You know what I'm saying? The cash flow keeps growing and growing. The only problem with the kids is the cash flow goes the other way. As you have more kids, the cash flow goes in negative. But in all seriousness, it's one of the things that for us, me and my wife, is what our goal was, to have a great family, to teach others about how awesome family can be, how important family is, and how when a husband and wife, for us, get together and grow, and you show your kids. We are our kids' stewards. We're stewards of our money, but we're also teaching our children. We want to leave an impression for the next generation. Well, how do you do that? You raise kids of your own. You raise them to be the next leaders.
I love it, man. I love the way you put that too. So you even got the kids and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and you kind of like applied a business strategy there. Okay. The first one, you don't know what you're doing. Okay. But you do it anyways. I love that. By the sixth kid, you're like ready to rock and roll. Well, my question is, are you planning on 7?
Hey, you got to ask the wife that. She's sort of giving me the Heisman right now. So I don't think we're going for number 7. But
she's
Trevor,
like, you
made a good point, and I want to make this point for everybody, because raising a family is like growing a business. They both need a mission statement. They both need core values. They both need core values. If you don't have core values for your family and you're rudderless there, they both sort of need boundaries. And there's no such thing as balance in life. You can't say, well, today I'm going to work on my business and tomorrow I need balance. Or today I'm going to work on my kids and tomorrow I'm going to let them run around. It's the same thing. It's very similar to grow both. You need to have passion for both. You need to be locked in for both. And you need to be dedicated to both of them. And for me, I was just fortunate to be able to have a restaurant years ago where the kids would come to the restaurant and I'd spend time with them. Transition to real estate, and now the kids are in my real estate education business. So it's like one and the same. And I have a podcast with my wife also, so it's family, business, and I like to intertwine it. That's what we like to do in our house.
I love that, but I do got to ask you about the restaurant, okay? Because my brother was a restaurant owner, and talk to me about the restaurant. But you know, I've always wondered this question. Okay, it's kind of a side topic. I've always wondered this, like. You see restaurants everywhere, right? It's such a saturated industry. Like, there's so many restaurants. And yet I hear like the markup and all that kind of stuff. And like the failure rate is so high. Like restaurants don't survive. And you see it all the time, a lot of turnover. So like, why do people get into that business? Can you tell me? Because you were in it. Why do people even do that? It just sounds crazy to me that you would even think about getting in restaurant business. It's so competitive. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, for me, I got in when I was 7 years old. My dad opened up a restaurant. So for us, okay. It was in our blood. And I went to college, got out of college, couldn't find a job. So we opened our own restaurant. And it was a family restaurant for, you know, over 20 years. In 2007, when my dad passed away, I had to stop and think, was I living his dream or am I living my dream? And one thing that the restaurant did teach me was it's a lot of hard work. And like you said, when I was doing it 15, 20 years ago, there was less competition. Like right now, like you said, the markup is there. And I think what they've done, what social media and Instagram has done is they've glorified it. They've glorified these cooking shows and made it seem sexy, like flipping homes. Flipping homes to me is a complete waste of time. You do all that work and then you sell and you pay half the profits to the government. There's no cash flow in that. Then you go to the next one. You got a golden goose. You just laid an egg and you're going to kill the goose. That to me is like flipping. And it's the same thing in the restaurant space. The restaurant space is great, but unless you can have a business where it's franchisable and you're creating an exit, all you're doing is creating yourself a job. And how do I know? I did it for 20 years. And if you don't understand that concept, I hope that I impress upon you to build a business, buy a franchise. So at least that franchise, at the end of its run, you're able to exit that. And it's the same with real estate. If you don't have an exit plan for your real estate, all you're doing is getting yourself a job, my friend.
Man, that's good. That's so good. I'm going to give you a mic drop for that, because guess what? That's exactly what my brother did. Love him to death. But, you know, he opened up this restaurant, man. He was a slave to that thing, right? I mean, and it's, you know, it, I mean, a lot of us in our businesses, we're a slave to our business, right? Unless you can get to a point where you can step outside and it's running itself, right? Otherwise, if you have to show up every day and work it, then, you know, but I mean, that just makes sense. So I was always just curious about the restaurant industry, why people get into that business with it being so tough and the failure ratio being so high. But I want to dive now into your real estate, okay? Because you've done some incredible, incredible things. You got a lot of success there in multifamily real estate, okay? Can you share a little bit about your journey and what initially drew you from restaurant into multifamily?
2002, I bought my first 3-unit long time ago. And I'm like, wow, this is great. I like the real estate thing. It was right up the street from the restaurant, so it was easy to manage. In 06, I bought a mobile home park, invested in it, crapped out. 07, strip mall, crapped out. 08, couple duplexes, not so great. And then I realized I've got this shiny object. I'm going all over the place here. What do I need to focus on? And in 2008, I said, I like this multifamily thing. It's a basic human need. It's food, clothing, and apartments. You need a place to live. You can't buy it on the internet. So I said, okay, I'm all in on this multifamily thing. I met Jake in 2009 because he was the pharmaceutical rep, sales rep, coming to my restaurant, getting food orders and bringing them to doctor's offices. So I created a great relationship with him. And you're talking about values-based decision-making. I'm like, well, I like this guy. I want to work with him. He's a hard worker. He's young. He's a hustler. He moves.
Who's Jake? Jake? Sorry.
No, Jake's my partner. Jake and Gino. Jake and Gino. And in 2011, he moves to Knoxville. And in Knoxville, we're like, okay, I like this market. We buy our first 25 unit in 2013. And the reason why we went to multifamily was, like I said, I didn't want to fix and flip. I didn't want to be transactional. Transactions pay the bills and equity makes you rich. I knew that from the very, very beginning. And I'm like, I already have a job. I don't want another job. I want something where I can create some type of wealth, some type of residual income that pays me every month. And that's why we got into multifamily straight away.
Transactions pay the bills. And what'd you say?
Equity makes you rich.
Equity makes you rich. Hold up. Mic drop. Let's go. I like, see, that's a good quote. We're going to put that on quote card for you. Okay. We're going to post that. I love that. Okay. So talk to me about you and your wife, Julia, right? You've built this empire, but you're also certified personal life coaches. And tell me how that, you know, these two aspects of your life intersect. And then how does that influence your approach to business?
In 2018, I was doing a live event in Jersey, New Jersey. And I remember being downstairs in this realtor's office and I was just speaking to students and I was just giving my presentation. And after the presentation, people come over to her, they're crying and they're saying, Gino just changed my life and going on and on. And she turns to me and says, What do you do? What do you really do? I said, I'm a life coach, Joel. She didn't understand the concept. And she said, you know what? I want to do what you do. So she went out and became a certified life coach herself, marriage coach. And the amazing thing about being a life coach is what you do is you really talk to people. You're there to empower them. You know, Trevor, you have your goals. You have your life. You have your answers within you, inside of you. A life coach is there to try to pull them out of you by asking questions, by giving you that personal space, looking in your past, like acknowledging what happened in the past, but also trying to create a vision for the future. And we all have visions. We all have goals. We all have aspirations, but a lot of us are stuck in fear. A lot of us don't know how to ask ourselves those questions. And to me, a life coach is that's what I think their main job is, to ask those empowering questions and to be able to listen and then asking you the right questions to bring you to the right, to your right answers, because your answers are going to be different than my answers. And once you're able to do that, you can do that on a personal level. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to use that for my business and for my personal life. And then I'm like, this is pretty cool. We can help others to do that. So that's how it started, helping ourselves first and then going out and helping others.
So, okay. So you're going to have to excuse my ignorance on this, but life coach and business coach, same thing, similar, not really. Tell me a little bit about what the differences are between life and business.
Yeah, similar, but dissimilar. A business coach is more of a consultant. You're hiring Gino to teach you how to buy apartments. I'm going to tell you what to do. I'm going to tell you to buy right, manage right, finance right. Life coaches, so Trevor, what's in store for you? What's the next 3 years look like? Big difference there. I'm asking as different when you're a consultancy or you're a business person, you're hiring somebody to get certain type of results. When you're hiring a life coach, you're asking about, you know, general questions and about what your life is going to look like. Does that make sense?
Got you. No, it does make sense. And I'm sure a lot of times when you're life coaching, business comes into it.
Yes.
Because that's the vehicle that's getting them to their ultimate goals. Like they have their dreams and their desires and the things that they want in life. And the business is the vehicle that's helping them get there. And it's typically the challenge, right?
Yes.
That's preventing them getting where they want to go in life. And so I would assume that there is some bleed over there, correct?
There is. But I would challenge everybody listening to this right now. Ask yourself, what do you want? Most people listening don't know what they want. They know what they don't want. When I was at the restaurant, I didn't want to go to the restaurant. I didn't want to be in that business anymore. If someone had asked me back then, what do you want? I really didn't know. I didn't know that I wanted to be a life coach. I didn't know that I wanted to partner up with Jake and create this real estate empire. So the first step is to know what you want. The next step is to really know where your soul purpose lies, where your abundancy lies, to start breaking down all of those limiting beliefs, all that stuff. That's what life coaching does. Once you figure out that I want to become the next real estate mogul or that I want to open up a yo-yo franchise, okay, now I really want that. Now let's get the person to teach me the business skills. I think people just say to themselves, hey, let me open a restaurant. Well, why did your brother open a restaurant? If you really ask him that question, he may say to himself, I don't really know. I just thought it was a good idea. Well, he should have been coached on life, on skills, on what he actually wanted, what his objectives were, and do they align with your values, that values-based decision-making. If these things don't align with your values, you may become successful, but you may become miserable at the same time because they don't align with your values. I'll give you one quick example. I got out of the restaurant business because I didn't want to work on the weekends. I didn't want to work on the holidays. I wanted to spend more time with my kids. So I create this Jake and Gino platform. And all of a sudden, I'll get people calling me every week and saying, Gino, I want you to speak at this summit. I want you at this event. And then all of a sudden, I start going to these events every weekend. I'm leaving the family. And all of a sudden, I become the juggernaut. And at the end of the year, I'm like, man, I crushed it this year. I got onto 42 stages. I made $17 million. I've got 30 million, you know, Twitter followers, whatever it looks like. But I was never home. Were you successful? I guess from a business perspective, you were, but from a personal values-based perspective, were you successful? In my opinion, I wasn't, because I went against what my values were. And that's what a lot of people are doing nowadays. They're not aligning their goals and objectives with what their values are. Stop, think about what your values are, and then place, I guess, put an emphasis on your goals and objectives based on what your values are. And I think once you hit those values, those goals, you'll feel much more successful, much more accomplished.
I love that. And I appreciate your transparency in that. Just saying that, you know, hey, listen, I was crushing it, you know, but I actually let myself and let my family down of what I was trying to accomplish, the actual goal and the mission. You know, I think a lot of people can relate to that. What are your thoughts as you do your life coaching? Do you think most people have a clue what they want? Do they know? Or do you really got to dig deep to figure it out?
I think a lot of people don't. To be completely transparent, I think a lot of people don't, and it's not their fault. We're getting bombarded with thousands of messages. It was easy early on, back in the early 2000s. There was no Instagram. There was no messaging. You didn't know that you were a loser. You didn't know that your life sucked compared to Trevor's, right? You weren't comparing. You might have been, but it'd only been in your community. Now it's worldwide. Now you know.
Instagram.
Right? Now you know you really suck, right? Like everyone's telling you suck. But I think. If you really think about it, we don't really stop and think about what we want to accomplish in life, what, how we want to create that impact, we're worried about paying the bills. And if you're not financially free, you're only worried about yourself. Once you become financially free, like I did, it's like, okay, I can take a pause and start thinking a little bit about being more abundant, about being more impactful. And I think once you're allowed to do that, and once you're able to do that, that's where true happiness lies, because money is not the goal to me. Money is the result. If you are really good at what you do, you'll make more money. Entrepreneurs don't chase money. They chase opportunity, and then opportunity creates the money. W2 employees, small business owners, your brother, myself at the restaurant, we were chasing money all the time, every week. And then the week would go on, and then the next week. Those transactions were great, but they didn't create the wealth. They didn't create that opportunity. And I think that's once we start rewiring ourselves and start trying to focus on what you were calling passive income or more streams of revenue, once you're able to do that and you're able to get those basic human needs, then you can really start creating a life and you really start impacting others.
So do you think that's one of the first steps is to really look at, you know, financial freedom, essentially, you know, to making sure that you're set, you got a nice foundation, you're good, so that you can really focus on the bigger goal and the impact and all that kind of stuff? Or is that kind of like the foundation? You need to make sure your finances are in order.
To me, the very first step would be to read a book called The Psychology of Money. You need to understand your relationship with money. And if you don't understand your relationship with money, if you are a person who is afraid and who has to save money for that rainy day, well, when you're 62 years old and you've got $2 million in the bank, you ain't going to enjoy that money because you've been living in scarcity. Understand the relationship that you have with money. That's the very first thing that you need to do. I was a great saver. I was a son of immigrants. So for me, I was saving, but I was saving for what? For an event. What I ended up rewiring my brain was I was saving to buy an asset to pay for that event. And once that event is over, I still have the asset. Quick example, of our very first property that we bought back in 2013, it was a 25 unit property. We bought it. We still own it to this day. I have put two kids through college from that very first asset, and I still have four more to go. And guess what? That's going to continue to pay for my kids' college, the rest of the remaining four. I still have that asset. Now, if I had the scarcity mindset, I would have put money into a 401k, 529, whatever kind of savings vehicle. There's nothing wrong with that. But when that event is over, boom, money is gone. But if you're saving for that asset, and for me, it was just about the psychology, the relationship that I had with money. I was scarce. I just wanted to save it. I didn't understand that I could use the abundance mindset and invest in an asset that can produce that cash flow, because we don't have a net worth problem, people. We have a cash flow problem at the end of the day when we retire.
Man, y'all see why I like this guy, man. Woo, I'm going to give you another mic drop for that. Okay, hold on. So name that book again, because I think I need to read that myself. Name that book.
So the author's name is Morgan Housel. He's launching a second book soon, but the book is called The Psychology of Money. And it doesn't talk about...
Do you know him personally?
Been trying to get him on the podcast.
I was about to say, if you know him, man, I'd love to get an introduction.
Hit him up on LinkedIn. But one of the most important things from the book that I got from is person's happiness is really tied to their autonomy. If you're able to become financially free through investments or whatever, able to do whatever you want, whenever you want, with whomever you want, that is what I think leads to a person's true happiness, to be able to make those decisions, to be able to be autonomous. So don't worry about your return on investments on your investments. If you're investing in something risky and you can't sleep at night, is that the right investment for you? I don't think it is, because that's not your relationship with money. But if you're someone who's high flying, likes to take risks, likes to double down, and you're going to invest in multifamily, that may not be the vehicle either, because multifamily is pretty boring. You can create a ton of money, you can create a ton of wealth, but maybe you should slide on over to crypto or to NFTs. That may be your jam. I'm just saying you have to understand what your relationship with money is. And then from there, you'll enjoy your relationship. You'll enjoy the investing more. You'll become a more of an expert at something that you like to do, rather than me telling you to invest in a vehicle because I think it's the best. Find the vehicle that fits your personality and that fits your relationship with money.
That's so good. I'm going to pick up that book, okay? Because I need to learn and dive a little bit deeper into my own relationship with money, because growing up, I was very, very poor. I mean, extreme poverty. So I did have a scarcity mindset in the beginning. Became a really, really good saver. It actually was a good thing. You know, became a very, very good saver of money. I knew how to make money, knew how to save money, but I didn't know how to multiply money. I didn't know how, you know what I'm saying? I didn't know how to do that. And so that's actually why I got into financial services, so I could learn all this stuff and figure it all out. But yeah, you know, I know that I had a scarcity mindset, and I know it creeps back in from time to time as well, you know? So it'd be good for me to get that book, you know?
It'd be good for everybody to get the book. I think everybody needs to understand that their childhood, we've all gone through certain traumas. And I don't mean a trauma by getting beat up or by your dad spitting on you. People say things to you. You're around that environment. If you're around an environment where there's lack of money, all you hear is, we can't afford this. It's not in our budget. Money doesn't grow on trees. And when you become an adult, it sort of seeps into you and it sort of beats you down. And then you have your friends saying that to you and you're like, okay, it's just a reinforcement. It's just about rewiring and putting yourself in different rooms, reading different books, and saying to yourself back in 2008 when the world is on fire and I'm like, I'm working harder, I'm making less. Well, why is Richard Branson crushing it? Why are all these other entrepreneurs crushing it and I'm not? There's got to be a difference. They're not living in scarcity. They have a different wiring. They have a different paradigm on life. They have different ways to look at opportunities. They're going towards their sole purpose. They're creating abundance where I was not at the time. And when you start putting those messages into your mind and start really reliving what your childhood was all about, you can say, okay, challenging those beliefs. Why did I think like that? Who told me that? Why are people here today succeeding when I wasn't succeeding? And then all of a sudden, your brain starts looking for the answers. And they start coming to you.
Yeah, I love what you're talking about because, I mean, the way I grew up, you know, again, when I say extreme poverty, I mean, there was times we didn't have lights or water or food. And, you know, I remember having to steal water from the neighbors to in a bucket, right, and take it back to the house and pour it in the toilet just so the toilet would flush. You know what I mean? We would, like, camp out in the house. So it was like camping inside. Okay, we had propane heaters and like, you know what I'm talking about. So it was like broke, you know, but, and so that created this like saving, like, I'm like, I gotta say, like, whatever I have is like, I have to save it, you know?
So
which
amazing,
actually was a good thing.
Trevor, what's amazing with your story, if you look back at your poverty, what you're doing is your gift or what you're trying to go towards, your talent is you're trying to help others avoid your situation. And that's noble. And if you think about that, I think everybody should look at what happened in their past. You had that trauma. You had the problem with saving. You're trying to empower families to take steps to secure their financial future. And that's really noble. And that is your why. So for all of us, if we can diagnose what our why is, that will really help us to figure out what our sole purpose is. And for me, it's sort of the same thing. I grew up great parents. I had that scarcity mindset. I want to teach people about personal finance and education, because that there's a lack. People with financial intelligence can change the world for the better. I truly believe that. If we all had some level of financial intelligence, we wouldn't be beholden to government for handouts. We wouldn't be beholden to employees. We would be able to take our own control. And I think what you're doing is noble, man. I mean, like, think about it. You had a rough childhood. You didn't let that hold you back. You're like, I'm building a company trying to help others understand this money game.
Well, I really appreciate you saying that and recognizing that as well, because that is 100% what it is. You know, my driver, my why is like, I don't want people to go through the same pain that I went through and the same traumas and things like that. So I'm trying to help. And I kind of looked at it this way, that anytime you go through a struggle, a pain, a challenge, if you can figure out a way to create a roadmap to make other people's lives easier, right? Because somebody's going to go through the same crap you went through, right? It's inevitable. Somebody will go through the same thing. And if you can create a roadmap, a system, a process, something to help make the next generation's life easier, well, that's going to be your biggest setup. So your setback will become your biggest setup. So speaking of processes and systems and all that kind of stuff, okay, in your experience, what role do the systems and processes play in scaling, right, a multifamily real estate business? And can maybe you highlight a few key systems that you've put in place for other game changers like yourself?
This is talking from personal experience. Like I said, I had the restaurant for over 20 years. I had one restaurant for 20 years. Within 5 years, Jake and I had 1,500 apartment units. I mean, that's massively different, completely different. In the restaurant business, I'm a guy. I'm a do this, I'm a do that. and Amma gets burned out. And Amma's always blaming someone else. It ain't my it's not my fault that my employees suck. It's not my fault that I ain't growing the business. The first thing I think every entrepreneur needs to understand is you need to have that responsibility mindset, the long-term mindset. And if you don't have that, then you can't become an entrepreneur, because there's days that you're getting punched in the face. There's days that you want to sit in the corner. You're crying. You don't know what the hell's happening. You can't talk to anybody because nobody really understands it. And I think the first thing that me, Jake, and I did when we started growing and scaling was we needed to pick out our core values. I had no core values at the restaurant, so I was not a leader. I didn't have any systems as far as jobs, duties, responsibilities, but those core values were key to us. Our people first, make it happen, extreme ownership, unwavering ethics, and growth mindset. Those are our five core values at the Jake and Gino companies, because it's really important to have that North Star. And when something goes wrong, you have a customer service defect, well, it's people first. Not who's right or who's wrong, how do we fix it, right? And it's constant growth mindset. You're either growing or you're regressing, like your previous guest said on before. It's important to have that growth mindset. I didn't have that at the restaurant. I was stuck there. I was not willing to learn a POS system or to learn how to grow that business. And I think that is where you have to start. If you want to start scaling up, you have to start doing that. And I think the next thing is, I know a lot of people probably heard about him, but Gino Wickman with that EOS and that Traction book. I mean, amazing entrepreneurial operating systems. Go into that book and start learning about priorities, level 10 meetings weekly, a cadence of accountability. All of that will change. When it's just Gino and Trevor running a little mom and pop business, you don't really need that. But when you start buying two properties, then three, then four, then you need to start hiring. You really need those core values, and you really need a cadence of accountability, like you were talking about, that foundation. Those to me are the foundations of any business that's scaling. If you don't have that, then you can't bring the right people on. You can't hire the right vendors. In our space, you don't have the right investors or even the right residents to be able to put into your properties. You have to have those as foundations, and then from there, you can grow your business.
Well, I love how you're giving all these examples as well. So your value-based decision-making, right? You got your core values. And whenever it sounds like you run into an issue, a challenge, or a decision that you're trying to make, you just lean on your core values and say, hey, does this align or does it not align?
Yes. And it can be challenging, because sometimes you think you have a value, but it's not your value, or you didn't have it. And you've all of a sudden, you know, when I first got married with my wife, family was a core value, but it wasn't what it is now. It's obviously different. And, you know, when you're working with a vendor or a vendor does something and you don't feel good about it, they're going against your values. If, you know, we had a bus tour at one of our properties about 2 years ago, and I remember getting to the property, getting off the bus, and the landscaping was not done. The landscaping was just looked terrible. It made us look terrible. And our landscaper violated our core values of make it happen, right? He did not have that property done. So it's one of those things where, you know, they didn't do the job right. They did it wrong. They didn't execute. That vendor was let go because he violated. And if you continue, and it's upon, and let me, as I'm thinking this through, we can make excuses for our vendors or for our spouses or for our partners. Oh, well, I'll let it go next time. And you know, it doesn't feel good, and you know it's going to happen the next time. And it's about responsibility, and it's about not being the victim, about saying to yourself, time out. This partnership is not going well. Let's set it up. You need to have those expectations. And if we're not hitting those expectations, that's where your core values come in. And if your values don't align with your partner, that partnership is not going to last.
This brings up something that happened to me just yesterday, where I have someone that's on my agency is, you know, works for me, and he's basically done something three times now. It's the third time that I've told him not to do. And I know that, you know, at the core of it, he's not doing it intentionally. Like, I know that he's not. It's like he's just overlooking it or moving too fast, and just for whatever reason, he's just messing up. And this is the third time. And I'm like, dude, like, what happens if we have a number four? Because this is the third time. I'm like,
and what did he say?
This is like a come to Jesus meeting.
Yes. And it's very difficult because it's personal. I mean, you may be friends with this person. You may need this person. But at the end of the day, I think short-term pain for long-term gain. That's really what it comes down to. And it's easy for me to say it, but I've been through it like you. And it's one of those things, if he continues to violate it, you're going to feel terrible. You're going to continue to feel terrible. You're going to continue to make those excuses. You just need to sit down with this person and say, it's the third time. What are we doing here? I mean, this is like, you know, that's you need exactly to set those expectations.
Yeah, he said, he's like, well, you're going to have to, you know, let me go and this, that, and the other. I'm like, all right. Well, I mean, it's kind of, you know, that's where we're at. You know, I don't want to have to let you go, but I just, you know, we can't continue this. This mm-hmm. is the third time in a row, and we've had this conversation three times. So anyways, but that's
the life of an entrepreneur, right? That's what I was talking about. You're in the corner crying the fetal position. It ain't easy, but it's the best.
Yeah, and I love him too. Like I like as a person and everything, I just love this guy. I love mm-hmm. him, love him, love him. So I'm like, dude, I told him, like, I don't want to do that, but listen, we're not going to have number four. Okay. So let's not let it happen again.
All right.
Tell me about your podcast. Okay. The Jake and Gino Show. You've mentioned it a couple times, and Movers and Shakers. You have two podcasts or just one?
We have the Jake and Gino Show, which is Jake and myself. We're talking about real estate. We have the Movers and Shakers, which is a podcast that we interview our students closing deals. And then we have the Julia and Gino podcast. I do it with my wife launches every 2 weeks. We actually interviewed JP Sears the other day from Awaken with JP. We just get on guests. We talk about family. We talk about values. We talk about commitment. We talk about deeper relationships with your spouse and with your children. And that's somewhere where I've been trying to focus on more, because I think there's a lack of that nowadays. I think bringing on dads and having a conversation with dads, how to be better role models for your kids, and how to be a stronger dad. And what does that look like? What are this toxic masculinity? There's no such thing as toxic masculinity. It's just men trying to figure out the world. We're trying to figure out how to navigate and how to actually raise empowering women and how to be role models for our sons.
Yeah. Okay. So I like that. You've got a bunch of different shows. Y'all need to go check them out, because first of all, I know how much work it is to do one of these shows. And you've got three or four different shows, and they're all they're all pretty good. So you guys need to go check them out. For those that are looking to get into the multifamily real estate arena, like, okay, I don't have any multifamily real estate. Okay. And it sounds like, I probably should get into that. So let me see what kind of advice or resources you would recommend for somebody to just get started and kind of get their feet wet.
Well, before I recommend my website, I would challenge everybody. I would challenge everybody.
You're like me. Just come to me, and then I'll make it happen.
But before me, I would say go to BiggerPockets. I mean, most people on would never promote another competitor, but I think BiggerPockets is the all real estate, because you may not like apartments, you may like mobile home parks, you may like single family homes, you may like self storage. It is the wheel, the BiggerPockets. They've been around for over 20 years. They were probably the first go-to platform on there. So go on there, go check them out. See what kind of resources and stuff they have. They've got podcasts as well on real estate. But if you do want multifamily, just go to jakeandgino.com. We've got tons of articles, blogs, podcasts on that. For me, if you're in single family or you're in real estate, it's a natural progression. You may be overwhelmed and say, well, I see this 50-unit apartment building. How do I get into that? That's the wrong question you're asking yourself. Don't worry about a 50 unit. Worry about a 2 unit if you've never done one before. Think
that's
big,
what I was going to say. Small. Okay, let's say I get into a two to three unit kind of a deal, right? Okay, because mm-hmm. that's where I want to start. I just want to start small. Okay, I don't like I can't I, 50 units not for me. Okay, not right now, anyways. But 2 to 3 unit deal. Okay, what type of cash flow you know do you need to get into something like that?
That's
you know,
a great obviously. Question. It depends on the market. It depends where you live. If you're in San Francisco, a 2-unit may cost you $3 million. If you are in Omaha, Nebraska, a 2-unit may cost you $200,000. That's why, I mean, it's a challenging question to ask. But when it comes down to the psychology of money, you read that book first, understand where your investment criteria. It also comes down to your goals. I mean, Trevor, what are you trying to accomplish with multifamily? What are you trying to accomplish with real estate?
Okay. So yeah, I mean, that would be good for me to figure out. Okay. I would need to figure that out. That's kind of the next step for me. So yeah, me and you need to talk, because I want to get into that. I'm going to be honest with you. It's something I've thought about for a long time, is to dive into the real estate game. Okay. You know, I follow guys like, you know, GC, Uncle GC over here, Uncle G and Grant Cardone and all of them over there. We you know, so I want to get into this real estate game, and so maybe you can help me, Gino. I need to follow your advice, okay? A couple other questions I have for you before we wrap this up. Okay, so you and Julia, right? You're known for your dedication to personal development. Can you share maybe a personal growth strategy or a practice that has had a profound impact on your life and your success?
The Seven Habits by Stephen Covey. Maybe this may be a tip that doesn't fit so much with personal development, but with, for me, and especially people in the real estate space, we're always trying to put out fires. We're always doing things that are urgent and important, but many times we aren't doing things that are not urgent but important, like going out and making those relationships, like getting on a podcast. It's not an urgent thing, but it's an important task. So find out what is important in your life but not urgent and spend more time doing it, like reading books, like calling real estate brokers, like underwriting deals. These aren't things that you do daily, like every single day, but they're so important. Find out what's important in your sphere of your job, of your influence, and start focusing on that. And once you start dedicating hours to that, you'll see your life will expand. And I think the second part is you need to start focusing on things that generate revenue. I mean, most of us like to do things that when we're busy. We're busy, we feel great. And how do I know? I'm washing dishes back in the restaurant. Hey, I'm busy. It's so awesome to run a rack through the dishwasher. You see it done, comes out, you do the next one. You feel accomplished at the end of the day. Well, Gino, you just made $12 an hour. Big deal, right? I feel accomplished, but I ain't making money. I should have been out there growing the brand or actually trying to sell more than actually be doing the things that I can hire somebody to do at $12 an hour. So always think of where your highest and best use is in your company and try to focus on tasks that generate revenue.
I love that. And what you were saying earlier, really it's about like being more of a forward thinker, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Opposed to the now and you know, the mundane tasks, you know, the emails and all of this stuff that, yes. you know, the busy work.
Yes.
But think about, okay, what's really going to move the needle? Not necessarily even today. Like, what is going to move the needle long-term as well? Mm-hmm. What are the actions I can do today that will mm-hmm. help move the needle long-term? Mm-hmm. I constantly think about that. Like, I'm always thinking about, you know, 10 steps ahead.
Yes.
And what can I do today that can help me move the needle forward? So I love that. Definitely. That's another book that I haven't picked up, that I need to see. I'm getting into this book thing, man. You know, the longer I do this podcast, the more authors I meet and the more these books come up, and I'm like, I've just never been a big book reader, but now I'm even writing a book myself. So what the heck, man? I'm just
dude. Trevor, one thing I'd say is with that cadence of accountability, people may say, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to figure out what I need to do. We have the quarterly priorities. Every quarter, at the end of the 3 months, we diagnose what we need to do for the next quarter. Because if you're like most people, you're running like with chickens without heads because they've got so many priorities. And high level, you know, people can really pull a lot of priorities through, but pick three or four every quarter that, you know, a priority is something that takes you more than eight hours. Are you building a website? Are you building a marketing campaign? Are you building your brand? Whatever that looks like, break it down into priorities. And then from those priorities, you break it down into tasks that will actually accomplish those priorities. And if you can do that, I mean, it will simplify your life. You will be able to be more targeted. You'll be able to actually accomplish them. Instead of trying to do seven things, you only get one done. You may have four priorities, and you can really focus on those priorities for that quarter.
Gino, you're talking to me right now. You're talking to me, okay?
I can tell.
Because I do that. I get the shiny object, and you know,
you're the shotgunner, right? You're just mowing everybody down with everything, right? Yes.
Well, I've got all these projects, you know, and these things like, you know, writing the book and just all these different things. And I start the projects and get 75% of the way through. And then next thing you know, I got something else I'm working on, and I dive into that project, and I get so focused on that that the other one doesn't get completed. And I got 10 projects hanging around here. They're all They're all almost done.
I feel your pain, my friend. Coaching. Get a life coach and hey, jump on with a life coach. And you know what you do? When you have coaches, they may not even bring any value. But if you get on a call every 2 weeks, they're going to be like, Trevor, where's the book? Oh, crap. I got to work on the book. I'll see you in 2 weeks, Trevor. I want, you know, another 30 pages written. Well, Trevor is paying the life coach. And all of a sudden, it's like, holy crap, I got to write those 30 pages before I see Gino again. And it's just amazing. That accountability piece is important, but also the focus. When you have focus and you have clarity, man, it will set you free as an entrepreneur. Because the problem is you have that book in the back of your mind. And it'll always be there. And then you're working on your next project. That's right. And that thing is there. And then it keeps stacking on and stacking on and stacking on. Then we feel overwhelmed and we feel burned out. And that's what ends up happening. We're trying to avoid that by setting up priorities.
I love it, man. I appreciate you saying that. And hopefully the people that are tuning in, if you can relate to my madness, okay, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are like me, a lot of entrepreneurs, because our wheels are constantly turning. But it's important to prioritize it, like you said, and get things done. Okay. So you're not like me sitting around with, 75% completions. All right. Well, this has been a great episode, Gino. Where can the audience connect with you, and where would you like them to reach out?
Just go to jakeandgino.com. You'll see the books, the podcasts, the shows, the articles. If you have any questions, you want to reach out to me, my email is gino@jakeandgino.com.
Thanks for listening to the Who You Know Show podcast. My name is Trevor Houston, and if you've enjoyed this episode, consider subscribing wherever you listen and leave us a positive review to help us keep the mics on in the studio. Until next week, that's the show. It's all about Who You Know.